Welcome to Whistleblowers. I'm Greg Kerr.
Hey, who's there? Joseph Robinette Biden, you better not be playing with the lights.
Mr. President, I come to you on behalf of my generation to talk to you about this little plant situation. See, a lot of politicians hate it, but I'm gonna break it down and demonstrate to you why it's not as bad as they make it sound. See, you're the president that I believe can handle this. Heck, your campaign slogan was, yes, we can.
Part 2, Cannabis in Australia. Why weed should be legal. So I'm here with Jen Stone, investigative author, crime journalist, and Australia's Murder, She Wrote. Jen, part two today, we're going to talk further about why weed should be legal. And I know the psychology today researchers have said that conservative politics and religious people tend to focus on the negative side of certain topics like this one. They have a very strong physiological response to threat. Conservatives fear new experiences and often discount scientific research. Conservative brains are more reactive to fear. So we've got an American election coming up. We've had a recent Australian election where the right-wing politicians are in charge. Can you ever see the day in Australia where, like in Canberra, cannabis becomes legal?
Yeah, Canberra, you're allowed two plants.
Two plants.
Yes, how good's that? I can see me moving there in my old age if they don't approve it before then. It's interesting, you've got to get, when you look at medical cannabis and seeing the reasons why it needs to be approved, you just have to look at the health benefits. And you've got to think, well, why aren't these drug users got cancer? They're 50-odd. And it was one of the things that shocked me in the beginning when I started the King's Cross Sting series. They were 40-odd, 50, full-blown on drugs, you know, off their brain 99.9% of the time, and no cancer. It was like, how does it, they weren't eating properly. They weren't, coffee was a drug to them because they'd have, you know, 6 teaspoons of sugar in it and 3 teaspoons of coffee, and you'd think the spoon would stand up. And they'd drink coffee, and then ice in pot, and you'd started to see, well, how are they surviving? But it was the cannabis, and it was the minerals being delivered to the body in a way that the body absorbs it.
So just talk about that, and we'll hear from Norman Swan briefly, the qualities of the plant release nutrients into the system.
Yes, and to the gut. So we have our CB1 receptors and CB2 receptors. CB1 receptors, when they start to slow, we have signs of Parkinson's, colon cancer, Huntington's. Mice were bred to have low CB1 receptors and have more severe heart attacks and strokes. But the plant is of a pH 7.5, and our body needs to be kept at a pH 7.5. So as the minerals are in balance to one another. So normally people will take green leaves. If they're growing their own plant, they'll juice them or have an egg with a cannabis leaf over it in the morning and think that is very nutritious for them because they don't have the high. So it's a good way to start the day, especially if you've got bad arthritis and medical conditions. But many of the doctors who have medical conditions like through a car accident, a bad back, they will themselves start to use cannabis and they can't then practice, but they don't care because they are a functioning human being again. And it's amazing when the police go through and do these raids where they pull out all these plants, right? And I think The other day they did 8 farms and it was about $12 million worth of cannabis that they pulled out. The fact is it affects these sick people as well as the ones that are healthy that are just having the pot. So, but a lot of them link into the bikies, and I found a lot linked into bandidos over my research.
Yeah.
So if you were listening to last episode, Jennifer spoke about the THC or the addictive qualities of marijuana can only be released if the plant is burnt or heated up. So let's hear from Norman Swan, Dr. Norman Swan. I don't think he uses marijuana, but he does provide some scientific information which I think you'll find interesting.
The special access scheme and from approved prescribers. The conditions which have been allowed under the special access scheme include epilepsy, chronic non-cancer pain, multiple sclerosis, palliative care, and chemotherapy induced nausea and vomiting. But it's important to appreciate that medicinal cannabis is not yet a first-line therapy for any condition. The cannabis plant, Cannabis sativa, is cultivated to produce two distinctive products, industrial hemp and cannabis. The difference is based on the level of cannabinoids. That's the family of chemical compounds that the cannabis plant naturally produces. The two main players are cannabidiol, or CBD, or tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. CBD is not psychoactive. It doesn't make you high, while THC can make you high. Plants can be grown to produce higher levels of CBD or THC. Medicinal cannabis may use both CBD and THC. The dose and ratio are very much still in the trial stage and vary depending on the condition it's prescribed for and what someone can tolerate.
Now, Dr. Norman Swan's a good example of a medical doctor who has been trained from his early days, like the majority of doctors, through the modern Western system of medical instruction. Researching this topic takes you outside conventional norms whilst you do stay in touch with scientific information. Dr. Norman Swan paints a picture of things making very, very slow progress, but your research has brought you face to face with a lot of case stories where this product, in its non-addictive form, has had massive effects on people's lives.
Yes, it has. At my very early stages of researching the medical cannabis, I spent a time in Dr. Andrew Catalaris' car, and he's a doctor that lost his license through use of prescribing medical cannabis for children that have epilepsy. And just spending a couple of hours with him, I realised his phone was one call after another of people that had children, you know, an 11-month-old that was fitting 165 times a day. So that's like one fit after another after another. And you start to think, if the medical cannabis, the tinctures that he makes, can help them. And it doesn't, his formula doesn't help everyone because every person is different. But in the theory that I am pushing for is that if we actually did test the children on their medical, on their mineral profiles, we'd be able to see where the mineral was down and to be able to boost it up. So then you'd know more scientifically which cannabis would help that patient a bit further.
Adjunct Professor Richard Chai is a palliative care specialist in Sydney and has prescribed medicinal cannabis to 60 of his patients.
Yes, it can help improve appetite in some of my patients, not all my patients. It can help with nausea in some of my patients, but not all. It can help patients with nerve pain, but not arthritis and bone pain. And if patients have tried every other medications to help their nausea, to help their appetite, to help their nerve pain, and it is not working, then I'm comfortable with trying medicinal cannabis.
And I have had face-to-face life experience as well, Jen. I'm a teacher of children and young adults with often acquired brain injury, epilepsy, different conditions. And one of the things I've known is the quality of life of the parents is incredibly affected by their child's misery, if you like. And if you're a parent listening to this podcast, you will be nodding your head. If somebody's having 163 fits a day, it's impacting everybody. And I know some of the kids with progressive, more open-minded parents are starting to listen, well, probably have been listening for a long time, but they would have been locked up. They would have been demonised and they would have been put down by wide sections of society for trying such treatments. It's like a witch hunt and we have to stop this way of thinking. And that's why I'm so hard on some of our current political leaders and police chiefs on this topic, because it's a far cry from a group of 14 nomads being arrested on the south coast of New South Wales for the poor mums and dads who today, whilst Mick is laying the steaks on the barbecue for the boys down at Cronulla and ScoMo's at the footy blowing the froth off his schooner, these people's lives are made miserable, the parents of these young kids. And I've seen for a fact even a small dose of the cannabinoid in its non-addictive form has changed. In one case, a child with an acquired brain injury who was having the same level of fits that you're talking about had far more control over his behaviours at school. He was able to interact with peers and everybody was not walking on eggshells around this poor child, let alone the effects that it had at home for the parents. They were able to develop a social life again and not have this poor syndrome. So the product's there. And I know Dr. Swan, we'll go back to him shortly. They're a little bit slow, in my opinion, to admit a lot of this information. As he said, it's not used as a first-line therapy. It's a last resort. Talk to us about that. What's your research shown you in some of the cases that you've come across over the years?
What I noticed that the worst cases need the full compound of the whole cannabis plant. When you look at some of the pharmaceutical companies, they're breaking down the cannabinoids and only giving CBD in a CBD medicine. But we actually need to give the whole array. And I don't think we need to give THC to every person. I agree with that. But when we look at CBD, it can help so many things by relieving pain. Kills and slows bacteria growth, reduces blood sugar levels, reduces vomiting and nausea, seizures and convulsions, reduces inflammation, reduces risk of artery blockage, inhibits cell growth in tumours and cancer cells, treats psoriasis, tranquilising, used to manage psychosis, suppresses muscle spasm, relieves anxiety, promotes bone growth, reduces function in the immune system, reduces contractions in the small intestines, protects the nervous system degeneration. So it affects the whole body. But what it is a delivery of minerals to the body that the body can exist. And many people don't realise that many cancer doctors will say to a patient, take 8 drinks of green tea a day. But what they're doing is cleaning your receptors, your CB1 and CB2s. Then if they told the person to have a bit of mango juice, that will help those CB1 and CB2 receptors deliver the minerals to the body in a far easier. So there's a lot of things to do with the diet that can also help with the delivering that the minerals are.
Excellent. It's a big topic, this one, and, you know, we don't want to go on exhaustively, but there's a long list of reasons why.
And that was all that I read out that affected just with CBD. So there's no high, and they're all the benefits. So people could be having that, a drop in the morning, a drop at lunch, a drop in the night time, and then having their THC to go to bed, and by the morning they're fine.
I can see another episode coming up, and I haven't mentioned the dirty word yet. Well, there's two dirty words, pharmaceutical companies. And I'm sure that's the reason why our politicians and shareholders and share investors are waiting until they know that they're going to make a buck out of this before they give it the green light. So at the moment, where do people get this product from? If they want to break the law and be demonised by the right-wing politicians and religious types of Australia, people are doing it. Lady bowlers with arthritis are doing it up and down the coast. They're buying it through local health shops or someone in the community. Where can people get it from?
Well, I used to have to go to Woi Woi. And they told me the best stuff came out of the cop station. But that's another story. Yes, that the only way to get this is the illegal market for many. Many Dr. Catalaris has spent many months and years in prison and before courts trying to give it to a child that is unable to live without it. And that's where our laws need changing. It's not just it's a basic right to live. And if those children do need it, then they really do need it. You know, what harm is it? Most of them, and I don't want to be nasty, but most of them are not a functioning adult without it.
That's right.
You know?
And so just a reminder, Jen has just said this is the non-addictive form of the drug. Yeah. There's no addiction. There's no threat of gateway drugs or demonising this person is going to get into all kinds. This hysteria that exists amongst, I blame commercial media aspects, yes, and our politicians, our leaders, the voices that we hardly hear these days in the media get shunned. The Greens often speak up on this topic, or particular doctors might speak out in favour of this, you know. But we know out there that the voices we never hear are the naturopaths and the those that have got, you know, training in a lot of this area, and they can see the results. There's a black market, there's an undercurrent, there's people are doing this at risk, great risk to their reputations, purely based on some ideal that someone's harbouring, which is just wrong and needs to be changed, like Jen's saying.
So how do patients access medicinal cannabis?
Like any referral to a doctor or specialist, their GPs need to write a letter of referral, document exactly what the illnesses are, what the symptoms are, what they've tried to improve their symptoms. Medicinal cannabis doesn't have a lot of evidence behind its use, behind its efficacy. But the government and myself recognize that we should be trying medicines that have been shown to be effective. And if those medicines don't work for the appetite, if those medicines don't work for the nausea or don't work for the pain, then they have to be carefully documented that it doesn't work.
Now, a lot of this information is very, very clinical. It's based on a medical doctor who is doing his best the way he was trained by his medical profession from a young age. And the evidence that he would be looking for is based purely in Oxford University journals, scientific journals, who are written by other medical professionals with the same training. So we know for a fact that the doctors and, as he mentioned, our politicians, my goodness, you know, if they were going any slower with this topic, we'd be going backwards. And to some of us, it feels like we are going backwards. But the product's available, let's face it, widespread in Australia. It's non-addictive. Jen, I can see you trying to grab the microphone off me. Go for it.
Okay. I do a lot of research on a brain cancer, DPIG, Defoe's Pons Infruse Glycoma. And it's interesting, when kids get it, they're diagnosed. Some will only live 3-4 weeks. Others will live 18 months. It's nearly a 100% death rate. In 1990, it was called in America a problem. Now in 2020, it's called the profit for the pharmaceutical company. So the many of the chemotherapies, they won't cross the blood-brain barrier. And that is a major problem because of how our brain works. It protects itself. But magnesium crosses it. Zinc crosses it. Omega-3s cross it. Sodium crosses it. But the cannabis oil, when these families that are in desperate need, and many of them will say, I won't put my child through radiation therapy because I know in 4 to 6 months the child's going to die anyway, so why go down that road? But they will go to cannabis oil and a strong cannabis oil. And for many of those, they live. And it's maybe just a few, but in every patient that has cancer, has peptides missing in their urine.
Wow.
Now, when we replace that peptide, they can survive and live. And that sort of research is not done on a wide scale. We don't have anywhere in the world taking samples of every type of cancer patient and saying, we want a urine sample and we're going to look for the missing peptide at the first diagnosis. This should be mandatory, but yeah, it's not.
It's not.
So then we'd be able to treat the patient better, and that's utilising their own body to help fight the cancer as well as conventional chemotherapy and that. But really, the doctors will say to you, don't touch cannabis oil with taking chemotherapy because of the effect. What it is the pharmaceutical companies have not done the research to say, hey, why are we feeding the patient a carrot or an apple? It's the same effect as cannabis. It's the delivering of the minerals and the vitamins to the body.
Wow, I've never seen Jennifer Stone up on the high horse like she is today, folks. It's great to see this passion coming through and it's not being heard in society. Have a listen to where modern medicine wants to get you thinking.
But for Professor Sheffer's patients, it's a different story. She prescribes 98% pure CBD to some of her patients.
One of the companies was quoting that CBD for 1 year for an adult would be between $75,000 and $150,000 a year. Now, the reason it's so expensive is that it needs a lot of purification of the cannabis plant. So to get the pure CBD is expensive, but that's the part that we know is effective.
The law is yet to catch up with the legalisation of medicinal cannabis.
So the access has been a real issue and continues to be an issue. At the moment in Victoria, you can't get it for adults with severe epilepsy.
Currently, I understand the law says that if you have a trace of cannabis in your blood whilst you're driving, then you are driving under the influence of cannabis. Even if you've had taken that cannabis 3 weeks ago.
The field of medicinal cannabis is an exciting one, but there are still many unknowns.
I think it's going to be quite a number of years before we really understand the potential of cannabis and the different compounds and how they can help. The problem being we also have a lot of sick people who want the opportunity to try now. And, you know, those people have usually come to the end of the treatment options available to them and they've heard that cannabis may be a treatment option and they don't have the time. A lot of these people don't have the time for 10 or 20 years worth of research.
So the landscape's changed and I think that we all have to take it on board and start thinking about which patients can access it. But it also needs engagement with government around the funding, but I also think we need to be careful about making sure it's really doing something.
Thank God the landscape is changing, and that last little segment brings me back to Jennifer talking about the cost of the medication. And even in that episode of My Doctor, the medical professionals we can see are so painfully slow, saying it could take more years. And you even heard Dr. Swan say the politicians, the laws are so far behind that the amount of CBD in your system, driving a car 3 weeks after you've taken it, can get you arrested.
Yes, that's right. Many of the epilepsy children is cold tincture that they use. And for a child that's suffering from epilepsy, they can rub it into their temples and on their gums. And that like brings them back to reality quite quickly, you know. And it's those things that the patient at the time, the parent, when they're first moving on to it, they got no idea what to do. And that's where they need places where they can go and ask questions and be aware that, hey, I'm not going to get arrested for having a plan in the backyard. You know, I met a guy who actually tried very hard to get his daughter who had epilepsy onto medical cannabis, and he just couldn't because of the problems with society. It was going to be legalised. So he made all this cold tincture product. The problem was he wasn't taking it himself, and he ended up with a back cancer and died. But she survives through his advocating of the medical cannabis. And it was just a cold tincture that they make up and utilise. And she's come back. She's living a normal life. And her mum now isn't pushing it as an advocacy because her dad did it way back. And maybe that's enough to get them. But people don't really want that stigma.
No.
You know, but if it only takes a drop or so, you start to think, what's in it? For every drop's 25 leaves worth of minerals. And even when the pharmaceutical companies are saying, oh, it's got CBD, they don't put on it how much calcium, how much potassium, how much magnesium, how much zinc, you know, or whether it's got vitamin A or D or and chlorophyll, you know. Wheatgrass is great, even when you can't get cannabis to utilise. But they're not... No one's done a profile of the urine for these epilepsy kids either to see what's missing, what's not being absorbed even.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, now the prices. You wanted the price.
I thought we might talk about prices. It's been a long episode. We've covered a lot, but I think it's important to bring people up to date with the prices. And go ahead.
Okay, I've got some good prices. These are underground prices of a guy who's medicine man. So he does a wax, which is a gram, for $85. Now, that's little pieces you can break up and put in your vapor pen. Now, for many people that have severe arthritis, that will last a whole week. But you think if you're on a pension, $85 is a lot of money out of your pension. Just on that, let alone your other tablets. They do the THC vapor for a mil is 35 mil. A CBD oil for 1 gram is $85. CBD cannabis flowers for 25 grams is $200. So some people use the flowers to make their own tinctures. Now, he does THCA drops, which is $25. And he does a THCA fresh frozen flowers. That's 25 grams for $400. Like, it's a lot of money.
Mm.
Yeah. And like, you can get a couple of round pieces of cannabis pot up in King's Cross for $20. In a brown paper bag, and I tell you what, for many cancer patients, that's all they need.
Very good. And that could be a good way to end. You know, the dosage is being prescribed by drug dealers to many people on the street, and those prices are from the dark web, and we're not advocating people go out and buy these products because it is still illegal in New South Wales. But it does give you an idea of who's controlling the dosage, and whistleblowers is just simply attempting to shift the attitude, as the doctor said at the end of that video. We need to have a shift. We need to stop demonising people who are on dosages of different products, and we need to speed up this debate. So while the boys are down at Cronulla putting the steaks on the barbecue today, there's a lot of people in misery out there and maybe near death's door who are being told that they are the scum of the earth because they are using a product which is still illegal. And we need to grow up. Australia needs to grow up and stop the demonising of such situations when we know there's a product, the doctors are catching up with their scientific journals, does work, is non-addictive, and will ease and give quality of life to many people throughout the world.
Approximately 8 million Australians over the age of 13 had tried illicit drugs at some point in their lifetime, and almost 3 million had used drugs in the past year. Millions of Australians are using drugs on the regular, and according to data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, accidental overdoses and deaths are increasing. So the criminal law isn't stopping people from using drugs or even dying from them. But what alternatives are there?
All right, for another day, you've been with Whistleblowers. I've been talking and listening to Jennifer Stone, and we will see you next time for more discussion on this topic and other topics that are in the current media crime cycle.
Commissioner, a man named Harry J. Anslinger as head of the federal...